we begin on the U.S. border and south of it today. Unaccompanied migrant children are pouring into the United States at a rate of more than 1,000 per week. It's created what has become a humanitarian crisis and a political conundrum here. But as Washington struggles for a solution, we want to explore a little bit about the conditions driving these kids to flee their home countries. Long before taking on a dangerous and sometimes horrific journey, a lot of these kids are born into neighborhoods and lives that offer little hope of progress and the immediate threat of violence. Now, that violence has surged in recent years in many Central American countries, plagued by poverty and political instability. Honduras, in fact, has the most murders per capita of any country in the world, with an average of 19 people killed per day in 2013.
Honduras is in a really bad place right now. El Salvador, Guatemala, the push factor is what is driving this recent influx.
That's Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday. He talks about the push factor, and there is also a pull factor in U.S. immigration policy. In just a minute, we'll hear from Republican Congresswoman Candace Miller from Michigan, who's calling for an end to U.S. aid in that region. But first, I want to turn to Tracy Wilkinson. She's Mexico Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, you just returned from Guatemala last week, is that right?
That's correct.
And what did you find?
Well, we found a lot of children who had been trying to get to the United States. We ran into some who had been caught in Mexico and deported back to their homes in Guatemala. These are kids, you know, teenagers who just gave up on living in Guatemala, where they have very little opportunity, few jobs. One girl we spoke to, her family could no longer afford to pay for schooling. And so they see the only chance they have for a future is to go to the United States.
So that seems to be an economic draw of the United States for young people who don't have a lot of opportunity at home. What about the threat of gang violence? Another thing that we're reading about, most of the stories about Guatemala and Honduras paint a picture of gang violence that's so bad that teenagers flee because otherwise they'll be forced to join a gang.
That's very true. Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador have terrible gang problems that have existed for a while. This goes back to the mid-90s, but is getting worse in many parts. There are entire neighborhoods in Honduras and in El Salvador that are controlled by gangs. And so teenagers have the choice of joining a gang and likely getting eventually killed, or not joining a gang and also getting killed. So there's very little choice. Honduras has one of the highest murder rates in the world. And so, and in Guatemala, too, it's just a sense of lawlessness. People describe people getting killed every day. You know, the other day, this person was killed, and then with that, you know, this person was killed at the market, and this person was killed there. And so it is a constant threat of just inescapable violence.
And it's a very scary situation for them, Tracy Wilkinson. And I'm curious about sort of the calculus that you hear from teenagers fleeing, let's say, Guatemala. A violence at home is so dangerous so that they fear for their lives. There's no economic opportunity. At the same time, the journey to an attractive place like the United States is dangerous. It's expensive, potentially deadly. What's kind of the calculus that goes on in the heads of some of the kids maybe that you talk to?
Right. Well, that's what I kept asking. You know, why now? We went through a period the last couple of years where it was very dangerous for Central American migrants to cross Mexico. The drug cartels in Mexico were kidnapping, killing, raping, extorting migrants that tried to pass through. And in fact, we saw a decline a couple of years ago in Central Americans trying to cross because it was so dangerous. That has shifted now. As Central Americans hear that it's perhaps easier now to cross into the United States, especially children, especially single parents with children, they have made the calculation that, well, it's worth taking the risk. I think the cartels are in on this as well, I think. I mean, we're still reporting some of this out, but I think they must be getting a cut of from the coyotes, the guides who take these people through and who get paid a lot of money to do so, because we aren't hearing of mass slayings of kids.
One of the criticisms here at home is that U.S. policy allegedly sends the message to these young people that if they manage to cross over the border, it will be much easier for them to stay. Now, the law says that young people who arrived before 2007 won't be sent back in many of the conditions that we're talking about here. And then a lot of immigrant kids are misinformed, but they come anyway. What's the impression that people have of the law, and is that really a draw for them to come here?
Well, I think it is a draw. I mean, there are two. There's the pushing factor, which is the violence and the poverty, but there is also the draw, this belief, justified or not, that it's easier to cross and you would be allowed to stay. I heard from many people who said relatives had called them from the U.S. and said, now is the time, come. And even some of the aid workers that work in Guatemala and Honduras are telling people that now is the time. So that is certainly a belief that has been created, and I'm not sure can be very easily dispelled.
There is a big push for child immigrants pushed to travel a dangerous road to the United States, and also a poll. Tracy Wilkinson from the Los Angeles Times says we need to deal with the push, maybe most urgently. Tracy Wilkinson, thank you.
Thank you.
We turn now to a conversation I had earlier today with Congresswoman Candace Miller. She's a Republican from Michigan and vice chair of the Homeland Security Committee in the House. And Miller is calling on President Obama to cut off aid to Central American countries until this crisis is addressed.
Todd, I think that we have literally, for decades, really, our nation has been sending so much foreign aid to the Centrals, particularly these countries where they're sent, the three countries, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, where all of these unaccompanied children are now flooding through our border. In addition to that, we've also had free trade agreements where we've really given the nations, both in Mexico and the Centrals, through NAFTA and CAFTA, enhanced access to our markets with trade. And, of course, all in the hope that they could build better economies for themselves, stronger economies, stronger civil societies. And actually, part of our rationale was there to hopefully stem the flow of illegal migration that was happening from those countries into the United States. And I would just say it has not worked. And I think because we have done that for so many years, and all of this financial assistance not working the way that we had hoped, and now we have this humanitarian crisis right on our southern border here, I think we need to actually cut off further financial assistance. I'm not talking about cutting off diplomatic ties or anything like that, but financial assistance to the countries here, because they are unwilling really to assist us in stopping these unaccompanied children from flooding our border. And I think, again, in looking at NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and CAFTA, that's the Central American Free Trade Agreement, I would ask that the president, and I have asked the president, written to him and spoken out in the Congress about having us reopen, reevaluate, and even possibly withdraw, but at a minimum, reopen and reevaluate these trade agreements.
Now, NAFTA and CAFTA and free trade agreements like them are not really popular in your part of the country there in Michigan, so that's kind of understandable. But one of the concerns about cutting off aid is that it makes a situation in these countries where economic progress is so very slow only can make it worse by cutting off U.S. aid, that whatever benefit they were getting out of it, even if there's corruption or some of it's being misused, that it can only get worse from the United States perspective if we do that.
Well, look, we're not the world's ATM machine. We are a compassionate nation. I have traveled to the Centrals, Todd. Certainly I've been to Mexico. There was very much a desire on the part of the United States to, as I say, try to assist them. You know, the rising tide floats all boats, so they say. And that really has not happened. And many people will say that the reason you're having all of these unaccompanied children, this humanitarian crisis that is occurring at the southern border of the United States, is principally because of the economy, that they have such a very, very poor economy. Also, because of all of the violence, gang violence, and believe me, all of us recognize that it is absolutely horrific. However, it didn't just start that way. The reason that this is happening at our southern border now with these unaccompanied children coming across the border is, I believe, in my opinion, it can be laid directly at the feet of President Obama in 2011 when he made his change, without talking to the Congress, I might say, of what they call DACA. That's the deferred action against the children. And if you look at a graph, you will see that almost immediately, actually immediately after he made that determination by executive order, the line on a chart will just shoot right up through the clouds. I mean, you went from several thousand, or I think it was 6,000 unaccompanied children we had in about 2011. And, of course, today there are 60,000 going to 90,000, going to 120,000 if this is not stopped.
I'm speaking with Congresswoman Candace Miller from Michigan, a Republican. Congresswoman, before we let you go, you know, I wonder if we don't need to reevaluate maybe how we view some of these refugees. You know, somebody fleeing violence from, you know, Sudan or Somalia who comes here can often claim refugee status, and we view them very differently politically and from a legal perspective than maybe somebody who is fleeing into the country from Mexico and Guatemala. Do we need to start looking at least some of these kids as potential refugees and not just sort of immigration problems in our current immigration debate?
I think really, Todd, the first thing we need to look at as a compassionate nation, and now I am speaking now not as a member of Congress, but as a mother and a grandmother, these poor, innocent children, their parents are putting them on trains. They're paying up to $8,000 per head. They're stuffed into these cattle cars. They're on the top of these trains. It is the most horrific sight that you can imagine. Under extremely dangerous conditions, the children, it's such a dangerous environment. They are exposed to exploitation, to violence, rape, perhaps death along the route.
Todd, they sound like refugees to me when you describe these horrific conditions, Congresswoman. Those sound like refugees.
Todd, the reason they are all coming like this is because their parents think that if they can get to the United States that they will be able to just stay here like this. And I do not believe that we can just free fall, open up our complete borders without going through any kind of process. Or I believe in immigration, but it has to be legal immigration. And what is happening right now is a tsunami that is overwhelming our ability as a nation to take in these children, to process them. Our southern border right now is totally overwhelmed with what is happening here.
About $30 billion in United States aid has gone to Guatemala, Honduras, and the Centrals since 1980. Congresswoman Candace Miller is a Republican from Michigan and vice chair of the Homeland Security Committee and says most of that money should be cut off. Congresswoman, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.